Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive.
Today, we are grabbing a pretty powerful critical thinking toolkit. It comes from one of the 20th century's most, well, electric thinkers, Roland Barthes.
Mm-hmm.
And our guide for this journey is Jonathan Culler. His analysis really gives us a kind of roadmap to Barthes' work, which is incredibly diverse, sometimes difficult, but so influential.
Yeah, and this is such a crucial deep dive, I think, because Barthes really did fundamentally change how we understand meaning itself.
Right.
I mean, if you're constantly trying to figure out what advertisements are really saying or decode political spin or even just make sense of, you know, your social media feed, Barthes gave us the language, the tools to do that work.
So that's really the mission today, isn't it? We're not just doing a history lesson. We're trying to pull out this powerful, usable, critical lens for reading, well, pretty much everything around us. Exactly. And Culler's main point, his central thesis, is that Barthes' genius wasn't some fixed doctrine he just laid out.
Okay.
It was more like a consistent method of inquiry. His whole career was this restless exploration aimed at basically unmasking the hidden systems of meaning that shape our reality.
So taking things that seem totally normal, obvious, comfortable.
Uh-huh. And making them seem strange again.
Yeah.
To show that they aren't natural, they're constructed. Making the familiar strange. That's a great way Culler puts it.
That's a huge goal. But, you know, Barthes changed his mind a lot, right? He seemed to evolve, sometimes even contradict his earlier stuff. So how do we get a handle on his legacy today? That seems like the tricky bit.
It is tricky. And that's precisely why Culler is such a perfect guide here. He's the class of 1916 professor of English and comparative literature at Cornell.
Impressive title.
It is. And he's been absolutely central in shaping the very fields Barthes helped create: structuralism, semiotics. He knows this stuff inside out.
Mm. So he's like the essential translator, because Barthes can be, let's be honest, pretty dense sometimes. He goes from these really rigorous systems to talking about like pure subjective feeling.
Totally. And Culler manages to take these often abstract, complex theoretical ideas and just lay them out clearly. He makes them understandable. He shows us Barthes not as some dusty historical figure.
Like not a museum piece.
Exactly. But as this living intellectual force whose ideas are still sparking insights right now, today. Culler helps us think with Barthes, not just about him.
Okay, great. So where should we start? Mythology seems like the obvious place, right? 1957. That's where most people first encounter him.
Definitely. It's his most famous, most accessible work. And it marks this really important shift where Barthes moves away from analyzing just literature.
And starts looking at, well, everyday culture. Things like wrestling, laundry detergent, wine, fashion ads. Stuff right there in front of him.
Yes. And this is where he hammers home that core insight. Culture is never just neutral. It's never innocent. Everything we encounter, everything we consume, whether it's a magazine cover or, you know, a new gadget, it functions like a language.
Yeah.
It carries these hidden meanings, political, social, ideological meanings.
So how does that actually work? We probably need to slow down here and unpack the mechanism a bit, because this feels like the key part of the toolkit he gives us. How does a simple sign, like a picture, become the secret carrier of ideology?
Right. So Culler really breaks down Barthes' concept of myth as a second-order semiological system. It sounds complicated, but let's try an example.
Okay.
Think about maybe a fancy minimalist coffee maker in an advertisement.
All right. Got it. Sleek, probably chrome or matte black.
Yeah. So first order, this is just basic language.
Yeah.
You have the signifier, the physical machine, the picture of it.
Okay.
And that links to the concept, the idea of a device that makes coffee.
Right.
Put them together, and the sign is just coffee maker.
Right.
Simple dictionary definition, basically.
Makes sense. That's level one.
That's level one.
Mm-hmm.
But then Barthes says culture, or in this case, the advertiser, grabs that entire first order. So the whole concept of sleek coffee maker, and uses it as a new signifier at the second level, the level of myth.
Ah, okay. So the coffee maker itself becomes a word in a new sentence.
Precisely. And what does that coffee maker signify now at this second level?
Maybe sophistication or certain lifestyle, like modern living, being productive.
Exactly. Those concepts, sophistication, aspirational living, productivity, that's the second order signified. And the whole package, the coffee maker standing for sophistication, that is the myth. The machine isn't just making coffee. It's communicating that buying it makes you sophisticated.
And the crucial point, the really critical insight Barthes has, which color really emphasizes, is that myth makes this link seem natural.
Yes. It empties out the history, the cultural effort, the marketing strategy that created that link. It makes the connection between that specific coffee maker and sophistication seem obvious, inevitable, eternal, like it was always true.
It hides the construction, hides the fact that someone, you know, decided to link those two things for a reason.
Exactly. Hides the ideology.
Yeah.
And the classic example color uses, the one Barthes himself analyzed brilliantly, is that Paris Match magazine cover.
Oh, yeah. The one with the young black soldier saluting the French flag.
That's the one. Barthes showed how that image wasn't just a photograph of a soldier. It became a mythological signifier.
Signifying what?
Signifying the idea of a benign, inclusive, fair French empire, where all subjects, regardless of race, were loyal citizens.
Right. Which conveniently erased the whole messy, brutal reality of colonialism.
Precisely. It presented the empire not as a complex, often violent historical project, but as this simple, natural, positive fact. That's the power of myth.
Wow. Okay, you can immediately see how that applies to, almost every political ad or news photo or even viral meme we see today.
Absolutely. The takeaway is, always question what's being presented to you as just obvious, as natural, as inevitable fact.
Yeah.
Ask, what's the cultural construct here? What's being hidden?
So Barthes nails this analysis of myth, but he didn't just stop there, did he? The sources say he then went into this more structuralist phase in the 60s, trying to be almost scientific about it.
Yeah, he got really ambitious. He wanted to create a proper science of signs. Semiology, as he called it. He wrote The Fashion System, literally trying to map out the grammar of clothing, like how different elements combine to create meaning.
Like a linguist studying language structure.
Exactly. He was searching for the underlying system, the lang of culture. But, culture is complicated. It's messy.
It resisted the neat scientific model.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The sheer complexity, the constant change.
Yeah.
It just didn't fit into a perfectly closed system.
And that sort of failure, or maybe realization, leads to the next big pivot, right? This is where color says things get really transformative, around the book SZ in 1970.
Yes, this is huge. Barthes starts moving away from searching for one single unified structure and begins to celebrate multiplicity, openness, plurality.
And this is where we get that key distinction he makes, the work versus the text.
A distinction, color argues, basically redefined literary criticism and maybe how we think about meaning in general.
Okay, so the work. That's like the traditional idea of a book,
yes.
Right? A finished product.
It's closed. It's something you consume. You read it to find the author's intended meaning. Barthes called this the readerly text, or lisible. You read it, you understand it, job done. It's kind of passive.
Okay. So what's the text then? How is that different?
The text. That's the revolutionary idea. The text isn't a closed object. It's an open, dynamic network. It's plural. Barthes calls it writerly, scriptable.
Writerly, meaning.
Meaning it doesn't just contain meaning for you to find. It actively invites you, the reader, to participate in producing the meaning. You're not just consuming, you're co-creating.
Hmm. So how did he show this? This SEO was about a Balzac story, right?
Yeah, a short, seemingly simple story called Sarrasine.
Okay.
But Barthes does this incredibly detailed, almost line-by-line analysis. And the goal isn't to say, okay, this is what Balzac meant.
No, what's the goal then?
The goal is to show how meaning just explodes outwards through all these different cultural codes that intersect in the text, symbolic codes, narrative codes, cultural references. He shows how the reader activates these codes in the act of reading.
So the reader isn't just receiving a message.
No. The reader is weaving the tapestry. This, Barthes famously declared, is the birth of the reader.
And if the reader is born, someone has to die, right?
Metaphorically speaking, yes. The author.
Which brings us neatly to probably his most famous and definitely most controversial idea, the death of the author.
Controversial is right. People still argue about this one.
So what did he really mean? If the text is this open playground of meaning, why should we be limited by what the author said they intended or what their biography tells us?
Exactly. And color really stresses this. It's a methodological claim. It's not about being disrespectful to writers personally.
Okay, that's important.
Killing the author is about removing that traditional limit, that final authority on the text's meaning. It's what allows the reader to truly be born and play freely within the text's possibilities.
So the text isn't a message sent from one person.
Barthes saw it more as a tissue of quotations, woven from countless bits of culture, language, other texts. It's not a single voice, it's an echo chamber.
But hang on, doesn't that just lead to chaos? If there's no authorial anchor, Can any reading just be valid? How do you tell a good reading from a, well, bad one?
That's the pushback, yeah. Barthes might argue that it's about the richness and coherence of the codes you activate, the connections you make within that tissue of quotations. But fundamentally, yes, he's prioritizing the reader's productive freedom over finding one correct meaning. The value shifts from discovering meaning to making meaning.
Okay, that's a big shift. And that idea of active personal production seems to lead into his later work, right? When he takes this sort of affective turn.
Definitely. He moves away from the purely structural, analytical brain, you could say, and more towards the body, towards emotion, towards the experience of reading. This comes through really strongly in the pleasure of the text.
Pleasure, okay. Sounds nice.
It is. But he makes this crucial distinction between two kinds of pleasure, plaisir and jouissance.
Right. Plaisir is...
pleasure. It's comfortable, it's familiar, it's the enjoyment you get from reading something that confirms your expectations, fits your cultural identity, like reading a genre novel you love or hearing a song that feels good and familiar. It reassures you.
Okay. Comfortable pleasure. Got it. But then there's jouissance. That sounds more intense. It's often translated as bliss.
It is intense, radically so.
Yeah.
Jouissance isn't comfortable. It's disruptive. It's ecstatic. It's that reading experience or art experience that kind of shatters your sense of self for a moment.
Shatters yourself. Wow.
Yeah. It challenges your deepest assumptions, breaks down the smooth consistency of who you think you are. It's often linked to moments of rupture, difficulty, even frustration in the text. It's the highest goal. For Barthes, that moment, the text really gets under your skin, maybe even wounds you intellectually or emotionally.
That idea of the wound, that connects directly to his last major book, doesn't it? Camera Lucida.
Absolutely. Kohler points out this book was deeply personal, written in the wake of his mother's death. And here, Barthes shifts from analyzing literature to analyzing photography, memory, and grief.
He's trying to figure out what gives certain photographs their unique power over us.
Yes. He introduces two more key terms here. First, the studium.
Studium.
Studium is the general sort of cultural or historical interest of a photo. Mm-hmm. It's what you understand intellectually. You see a famous historical photo like the D-Day landings, and you recognize its context, its significance. That's the studium. It's shared general knowledge.
Okay, the public meaning. But then there's the other term, the unforgettable one.
The punctum.
The punctum. What is that exactly?
The punctum is different. It's not about shared understanding. It's that small, often unintentional detail in a photograph that just leaps out and, well, Barthes says it pricks you or stings or wounds you personally.
So not the main subject.
Often not. It could be anything, a worn collar, a particular pair of shoes, a stray gesture, maybe even a flaw in the photo itself. It's something that hits you with this intense personal affective force.
And for Barthes, especially thinking about photos of his late mother.
For Barthes, the punctum delivered this undeniable, almost brutal truth. This has been the concrete, specific evidence of a past existence, a life that was real. It connected directly, emotionally, to his grief and loss. It wasn't general. It was utterly personal.
That whole journey from the almost scientific analysis of myth to this incredibly personal reflection on grief, Kohler's book really captures that range, doesn't it? Barthes gave us a method, not a fixed system. So if we boil it down, what are the main takeaways for someone listening today? How can you use this?
Okay, three key applications, I think. First, that early stuff, mythologies. It's just essential for media literacy today. That critique of the natural should be like a reflex.
Constantly asking, what's being made to look obvious here?
Exactly. The most powerful ideologies, the most effective ads, they don't announce themselves. They just present themselves as common sense, as the way things are. So you need to constantly be peeling back that layer of naturalness. Don't let a slick Instagram aesthetic hide the political or commercial message.
Okay, so critical media reading, what's number two?
Number two comes from that work text distinction. It really empowers your engagement with all kinds of culture books, films, music, art.
How so?
Well, Kohler emphasizes that Barthes frees you from the anxiety of having to find the one right meaning.
Less pressure.
Way less pressure. You can be more confident, more active, more creative in your relationship with art. You're not just a passive consumer trying to guess the author's secret password. You're a co-producer, playing with the possibilities the text offers.
I like that. Active co-producer. And the third takeaway.
The third comes from his later work. The stuff on pleasure, emotion, photography like The Lover's Discourse or Camera Lucida. It gives us a framework for analyzing our own deepest feelings.
Like love and grief.
Yeah, or even just taste why you like certain things. Barthes helps us see these aren't just purely unique, isolated, mysterious experiences happening only inside us.
How does he do that?
He shows how even our most intense emotions are partly expressed through a kind of language, through signs and codes we've learned from our culture. If you recognize, say, that your way of experiencing romance follows certain cultural scripts, it doesn't make the feeling less real, but it can make it feel less isolating, maybe more understandable, less mystifying.
That's quite a profound synthesis, isn't it? He brought together this really rigorous intellectual analysis with such personal emotional honesty.
He really did. And Kohler's book shows that beautifully. The big lesson isn't that critical thinking kills enjoyment. It's the opposite.
It enhances it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It deepens it. Learning to read the world the way Barthes did, questioning the natural, embracing multiple meanings, understanding the codes, it just gives you essential tools for navigating our incredibly complex, media-saturated world. He makes you a more active, more confident reader of reality itself.
So here's a final thought to leave you with, building on that. If meaning is never truly natural, if it's always constructed through these processes we can actually analyze, how does Bartek's work challenge the way you think about your own core beliefs, your identity, your tastes?
Yeah, what assumptions are you holding on to that feel completely natural, completely you? Maybe it's time to try and, as Barthes would say, denaturalize them a bit today. See what happens.
Something to think about.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.